Today's scripture reading comes from John chapter 12, verses 1 through 11. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me." When the large crowd of the Jews learned that Jesus was there, they came, not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated.
So last week we looked at skeptics to Christianity, and I hope you realize that for those of you who have unbelieving friends or family members, that regardless of how good you are as an orator or someone who perhaps knows theology or has wonderful answers, that you will never be able to convince someone that Jesus is the Son of God. And the reason that is so is because if here we have a man who has risen from the dead, Lazarus, and rather than believing in Christ, you have a lot of people who want to kill Lazarus and Jesus. And just think about that for a moment, the irony and the oddity of that. There's a story by Pastor James Boyce. He talks of atheist Aldous Huxley. Some of you might know his name. He wrote the classic that perhaps some of us have read in high school, Brave New World. Aldous Huxley once approached a man who was known to have a very simple but radiant faith. And he said to this man, "Suppose you don't go to church today and instead stay home and tell me quite simply what your Christian faith means to you and why you are a Christian." The man replied, I can't do that. You could demolish my arguments in a minute, and I'm not clever enough to argue with you." And he said, No, I don't want to argue with you. I just want you to tell me simply what this Christ means to you." So the man then told Aldous Huxley about his faith. And when he had finished, in the eyes of this atheist were filled with tears, and he said, "I would give my right hand if only I could believe that." James Boyce, in commenting on this, he says, "What touched his heart? It was not arguments. It was a genuine faith expressed by one who knew Jesus and was not ashamed to invite others to come to him." I think today's passage is exactly this expression of someone who is so touched by Christ that there is but a simple expression of faith. It is a surrender of everything that she has. And when you see that type of genuine faith devotion, there is no greater witness to the world. And so here we're going to look at Mary's sort of road to this utmost joy that for her, Jesus was everything. And for Mary, it means surrendering first her resources in verses 1 through 3. Second, surrendering her reputation in verses 4 to 7. And then third, surrendering her resurrection, her understanding of life and death in verses 9 through 11. First, these resources that she surrendered. As you can see in verse 2 and verse 3, Mary took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. If you are a Christian today, I want to ask you, why are you following Christ? And what does it mean for you to be a follower of Jesus? How do you follow Jesus? Would your answer be, well, I attend church every Sunday. I read the Bible daily. I pray. I intercede for those who are sick. I tithe. I give to the poor. I'm a good moral person. I'm a good parent. I'm a good son or daughter. I listen to what my parents say, and I do not disobey those words. All of those are expressions, possibly legitimate expressions of our true worship of Christ, but none of them on its own reveal a heart that has been changed. We're told that Jesus says in Luke 9:23, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. You could almost use that phrase, take up the cross daily, means daily surrender, daily submission, the daily willingness, moment by moment, to trust Christ over anything else in your life. And if we're honest with ourselves, that's a challenge. But today, here in John chapter 12, we see this beautiful picture of someone who actually comes to this place, who surrenders everything, Mary. This is a familiar story and a familiar setting, because if you know anything about the Gospels, you know that there was a time before where Jesus was having dinner with Mary and Martha, where Martha was busy cooking and getting ready to serve, and Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus. And you know, it's actually very similar, except this time you have risen Lazarus, who is literally reclining next to Jesus, and reclining meaning leaning on or laying on his lap. And I know that sounds odd, but that's what the picture of true, like, sort of dinner fellowship was like, especially to someone you cared for deeply. And so Lazarus is that person who's just so thankful that he's reclining on Jesus. I think here you see Martha as well, doing what Martha does. She's serving again. But I don't think it's just about, you know, Jesus, tell Mary to come in here and help me in the kitchen. She's not frustrated. She's serving out of her love. And that's a wonderful thing. Some of us are exactly like that. It's actually a great picture of the fact that when Christ comes into your life, he doesn't take away your gifts or your personality. But what he always asks ultimately is, he wants your heart. He wants you, in the midst of who you are, to give of yourself to him. And in doing so, the things that you regularly do, it will be transformed in unique ways. Mary does what Mary does. But Mary does something drastically different than before. Yes, she sits at Jesus' feet, but before, she just listened. This time, she acts. And the way she acts is she takes this jar or bottle of perfume. It's pure nard. And she breaks it open and pours it on Jesus' head and on his feet. In Judas's words, the cost of this is about 300 denarii, which is about anywhere from $10,000 to $90,000. It's quite a large sum of money. In fact, I was looking up, don't ask me why, but I was looking up, what are some really expensive sneakers? And I know some of you are sneaker collectors. Maybe there's like two of you here. And I was looking up these one sneakers, these Louis Vuitton Nike Air Force Ones. And it is going for, if on a collector's edition, $300,000. But, you know, you could get it on the cheap for about $70,000. Anyway, that one thing, that object, is a treasure. And here we see this grand treasure. You have to think of it that way. And this treasure has sort of two ideas behind it. First is the person who's giving it, Mary. And it's possible, most scholars think that Mary and this family, Lazarus and Martha, they were probably relatively well off. They had their own tomb, they had this nard, and so therefore, they were people who could afford it. And you might say, well, you know, it's probably, if they're wealthy, then giving, say, a $50,000 bottle of perfume, that's not that big of a deal for her. But I think for us here, we, you know, you might tend to think to yourself, well, that doesn't apply to me because I'm not wealthy. Relative to places that we go to, like where the Malawi team goes, you are wealthy, very, very wealthy. And wealthy people generally have a difficult time in generosity and giving. You would think that it's actually the wealthiest people who give the most, but that's not true. It's not just true in any type of philanthropy, but it's also not true when it comes to the church. It's actually the people who are the poorest or those who are in the middle who tend to be the most generous. Because it's the truth that when you have a lot of money, it's actually hard to give it away. We see this in Matthew chapter 19, verse 22, when Jesus encounters the rich young ruler. And this man did everything right. He kept the law perfectly, as he said. And so Jesus says, well, you have one thing left. Sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And then verse 22 says, when the young man heard that he was this, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. I find that actually it is more difficult to be generous the more money you have. And something to teach when you're a parent of a young child is actually to learn how to be generous. If they get a job, even a simple part-time job, teaching them how to be generous with their resources by giving to the Lord, giving to missions, giving to those in need. It's a really important responsibility that we have as parents to actually teach our children that. I wonder if you have that discussion. If you don't have that discussion with a child who makes a dollar an hour, and simply to set aside even 10 cents for giving, I guarantee you when they make $1 million, it will be impossible for them to give away $100,000. That's a lot of money, $100,000. Well, it's not a lot of money for someone who's already given away 10 cents to the dollar. And that 10 cents is, by the way, a minimum threshold of giving and generosity. So I don't think we should be quick to evaluate and assess to Mary, well, you have a lot of money, so giving this $60,000 bottle of perfume, it's not that big of a deal for you because you're probably really wealthy anyway. No, it shocked Judas, definitely. I'm actually pretty sure it probably shocked Lazarus and Martha. They're probably thinking, what are you doing? Another thing about Mary is that it's most likely because this is such a large jar that it's often thought that this is probably some sort of family heirloom that has been passed down. I mean, who knows really, but what if a grandmother came along and said, Mary, I'm going to give this to you. This has been passed down generation upon generation. And it's actually for you, and it's to be used for your wedding day, partly for your wedding day, partly for your funeral day. So don't squander it. Don't waste it. Make sure you use it for that time. And so that one treasure that you have that has been even a part of your family heritage, giving that up, that's difficult. That takes a lot of, not just courage, it takes a lot of boldness and conviction. This is the follower of Christ, the one who takes up the cross daily. The reason it's to be taken up daily is because daily there's always a temptation to hold, to hoard, to say, this is mine, to take from people. But by taking and by our self-centeredness, we actually rob ourselves of joy. Might I add that Mary knows, despite giving up this treasure, she gains so much more. Maybe she heard Jesus' words in the parables where in Matthew 13, 44 to 45, he tells of a man who finds out that there's a treasure in a field. And so he sells everything that he has to go and buy that field. And when he owns that field, he owns that treasure. Jesus also tells the parable of the great pearl where this man who finds out about the pearl sells everything he has to buy this pearl. And this is the heart of Mary. And this is what Jesus is calling us to as a follower of Christ. If you really believe him, you know his word is true. His promises are real. Therefore, you actually are willing to surrender everything, knowing that what you will receive will be 100-fold, 1,000,000,000-fold. You cannot outgive God. And the way that God blesses is far beyond that you can ever ask for or imagine. So there are treasures that we have, many. Yes, some of it is money. Some of it is possessions, our home. Some of it is our gifts, our and there's all sorts, but that one treasure, can you surrender it and entrust it to the Lord? Pastor Richard Phillips tells the story of a preacher who asked his church to make an offering of their greatest treasure. After preaching like this, be careful, I might send the offering plates around, but he actually does this, and people go around, and you know what? They start literally taking their earrings off and take their wallet and put it out because they're so convicted by what the Lord has done. And as the offering plates are collected, it comes back, and the ushers, as they're looking and counting everything, they notice a piece of paper. And in the piece of paper, it was written by an older woman. She had written on that note that her daughter had a desire, a longing to be a missionary. But this mother refused to give permission. She felt she was wasting her life, her gifts, her talents. It's funny because actually this past week, Thomas and I, we met with one woman whom she will share her story with us, who's planning to be a missionary, and she has an incredible educational background. Graduated from UPenn, both from Wharton, nursing, went to seminary, did all this, parents again. So this story, I literally heard it this week of someone who's going to be a missionary, whose parents had a difficult time with it, of course. But anyway, go back to our story. This mother stood in the way of this daughter becoming a missionary. And on that paper, she said, "I give up my daughter to Christ so that she can serve this way." She wrote it in. They read that paper, and it was striking. That's treasure. What is your treasure? What is your perfume? What is that one thing that you say, I can't give this up, or I refuse, I don't want to? Is it your marriage or an ideal marriage? Your future spouse? Your reputation, success? The success of a child, your child. Your career, your reputation, your recreation. What is it that you're clinging to? Jesus is asking that you trust him with what you treasure. But like Mary, you have to love him so much that you find him the greatest treasure. And when you do, you will actually be able to surrender it, knowing that what you gain in return far outweighs what you give up. But you know what it takes? It takes breaking the bottle. If you notice, especially in the other gospel narratives, where it talks about the alabaster jar being broken, in this instance, we see that the jar is poured. And the thing about pouring is that you could pour a quarter of it, a half. You could say, "Lord, I'll give you 7/8, but not everything. I have to keep a little bit in reserve because when I get married, I might need it." And when you do that, you know that you haven't surrendered. You know that you're still holding back. And when you hold back, you'll never experience the grace of God. Not really, not fully. It requires breaking the bottle, complete brokenness. Because once the perfume is broken, it all spills out and you can't get it back. The hymn writer Isaac Watts beautifully puts it this way: "Were the whole realm of nature mine, that were a present far too small. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all." So we have Mary surrendering her resources. We also have her surrendering her reputation. In verses 4-7, John records for us, "But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, 'Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?'" I can imagine his angry face. He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me." When Mary broke this jar, everyone was shocked in the room. Here's why: because it stunk in there, right? It smelled so strong. There's a, John tells us that this is pure nard. Sue and I were talking about this yesterday, and we were talking about eau de toilette. You know, eau means in le français, it means water, meaning that most perfumes are diluted with water because the inherent spice or fragrance that's created is so strong that it needs to be diluted with water. And therefore, it also allows it to, you know, you can spread it out. And some of you I know wear nice perfumes and nice colognes. They can get pretty expensive. This is a pound of pure nard. Remember, nard and all these perfumes were meant and it just came off of Lazarus being risen from the grave, who was surrounded by all these spices to mask the smell of a decomposing body. And this nard was meant for stuff like that. If you've ever gone into a department store and you go to a cosmetics counter and a perfume counter, and if you buy one, you get like some samples, and there are those little vials, they're about this big. If you take a vial and pour it on your head, I guarantee you that most people will not want to be around you at all. They will avoid you like the plague because it stinks. It is so strong, that smell. And you know, when someone is over-perfumed, you think, what is going on there? There's always a thought. There's always a question in your mind. I know, you're all looking at each other. Wait, where's that smell coming from? Well, in a room this big, which, by the way, this was not their house. If we took pure nard, of a pound of it, and dumped it onto someone's hair and feet, first of all, that person would not be able to get that out for so long. Think about how often they'd have to bathe to get it out. Secondly, this whole room would stink. It would take a month possibly to get the smell out of this place. That's how radical this act was. It was unmistakable. Everyone knew what was happening, and there was no way you could get around it. But to top that off, Mary then, she's pouring it on Jesus' head, which, by the way, any oil poured on a head was meant to show the anointing of a king. And then, as we will see later on in the later part of the Gospel of John, when Jesus is washing their feet, the washing of feet was the task of a slave because the feet were dirty. And so Mary's doing two things. He's saying, you are the king, I am the slave. And she takes and unravels her hair, long hair, which would have been scandalous for a woman in that day. It would have been a sign of their prostitution, the selling of their body. But yet she takes it, and she takes that very hair, which is her glory, and wipes Jesus' dirty feet. It's a very stark scene. And when you think about that, can you imagine being in that room? The shock. For Mary, it was, I don't care what anyone else thinks. All I care about is what he thinks. That's surrender. See, we are so fixated on what people think. It controls us. It dictates who we try to make friends with, how we choose a school, how we think about a job, who are our coworkers, who are the people when we come, a newcomer comes, how we introduce ourselves, how we talk to our children, how our marriages are. Everything is controlled by the opinion of others. It leads to depression. It leads to all sorts of sorrows and miseries. And when we are looking and fixing our eyes on Christ, and all we care about is, what does he think? And Jesus, he welcomes it. He welcomes her. So Mary is saying, I don't care what people think about me anymore. I don't. Before you know Christ, that's all you do, is you care about what everyone else thinks. Now it's, I care about what Jesus thinks. And when you care most about what Jesus thinks, it actually resets rightly your relationships with everybody else. It makes it much more beautiful. Suddenly, you're not trying to prove your worth to people. And usually those people are not the nicest and kindest of people. They're not people who are generous and self-sacrificing. They tend to have always a motive of self-centeredness. But when you're looking to Christ, it actually frees you to be a kind, gentle, merciful, giving, generous person. Secondly is that by Mary doing this, she's saying to the Lord, you've rewritten my story. If there's any disgrace, now it's dignity takes its place. Wherever there's ashes, there's now beauty. When you come to encounter Christ, the risen Lord, he knows, you come to realize he knows even your darkest thoughts. But he doesn't look at you and knowing those and say, away with you. I don't want anything to do with you. You're so miserable. I'm holy and you're ugly, and that's the last thing I want is for you to come into my presence. You know what he does instead? He gives his life so that you can come into his presence. He wants to make sure that nothing will separate you from the love of God, even if it means the cost of his own life. This is our God. This is whom Mary encounters. He has rewritten your story. I want you to know that when you turn your treasure over to the Lord, he will bountifully bless you. And he will give you a new life, a new identity, a new hope, a new vision. When Mary surrendered her pride to Jesus, she was set free. She no longer had to think about what other people thought about her. She truly began to learn how to love another person. Judas is literally the opposite. He's a taker. All he cares about is, what's in it for me? What do I get out of this? He doesn't care about the poor. It's just an image setter for him. It's something that makes him look good as smart. He cared about how money would benefit him. And my friends, there is no greater destroyer of one's soul than this type of taking, self-centered pride. And so this type of person, if they're a parent, they take from their children. You know how they do it? Their child's success is their glory. And by making that their glory, they actually are going to do everything they can to make sure that child's successful, because it speaks so much about me. And I want to say that this is a temptation for every parent. And if you're honest with yourself, you know it's true. I know it is for me. And whether they are successful or not, it never ends, this temptation. It keeps on going. But that's the Judas heart. That's the heart that says, I'm not living for Christ and for his glory. I'm living for my own. And so I'm going to take from my child and make sure that she or he lives up to my standards. And if he doesn't, then you will get what's coming to you until you learn. And of course, then the tension, the brokenness of relationship, you could see the impact of that. It's dramatic. That's with relationship with friends. How you think of this way with the church. If you're new to the church or any church, and your instinct is, how is the church going to serve me? What am I going to get out of this? Versus, how can I be a blessing? If you're looking to Christ, you're always looking to serve others. You're always looking to bless others. If you're looking to yourself, you're always thinking, what am I going to get here? Who's going to speak to me today versus me going and speaking to others? Who's going to serve me today? Who's going to care for my needs? My friends, that's the Judas heart, the heart that takes. Everything is through self-centered, cynical, judgmental eyes of pride. To those who are aging, the older folks amongst us, and some who are heading towards that direction, or maybe you have aging parents, this also is a great temptation. The temptation of saying, as you get older, it's, I've done it all. I've raised my kids. Now it's my turn. I'm going to play golf all day and get to do whatever I want. Everyone has to serve me. And if they don't, then fooey on you. You know, then I cut you out of my life. And so there's this cantankerous spirit. It's the keep off my grass mentality. And the more you think of as actually I'm entitled to more, the more you actually grow more alone. I'm thankful because a lot of our seniors, they actually serve. Some of you probably encounter them when you walk in. They serve as ushers. They're doing that in their 70s. And that's a blessing for us. Some are in serving nursery, and they're doing it not because they're their grandkids. They're just serving that way. But it takes that mentality to actually show, I've surrendered everything, Lord, because I know that in doing this, I know I'll be richly blessed. Mary knows she owes everything to Jesus. And so giving her treasure is not a sacrifice. It is a path to ultimate joy. Judas, on the other hand, he doesn't trust in Jesus. So he clings to everything that he has. What really, it's pitiful, isn't it? 30 pieces of silver. That's actually a potter's field he bought. That's what he got out of everything that he did. Digging into the, you know, just the money bag for what? It's just absurd. And yet, how many of us are perhaps just simply living that life? We're taking. We're not giving. We're not generous. We're not kind. We don't see Christ. And so all we're doing is we're taking. And by doing so, we're robbing ourselves of joy. There's more to it. Actually, what Jesus offers is the resurrection. Verses 9 through 11. When the large crowd of the Jews learned that Jesus was there, they came not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. The resurrection of Christ is the pinnacle of the Christian faith. We've been talking about the resurrection for the past 4 weeks. It's because the resurrection is everything. Without the resurrection, the cross is meaningless. It's just the guy who died on the cross as a criminal. But with the resurrection, there is God the Son. We worship the living King. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:19, if in Christ we have hope in this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. The resurrection is what defines our faith. Without it, we're miserable. I mean, Christianity is a sham and a scam. So if Lazarus's resurrection is a pointer to what is to come in Jesus, then you could see why the Pharisees wanted him dead, because many people were believing. It's sort of ironic, though. Not sort of. It is ironic, and it's absurd that this guy was dead, that they know he's dead. He rises from the grave, and they say, we want to kill him. Just sort of, rather than saying, wait a second, that guy was dead once. He's alive. Maybe this Jesus, there's something to him. But no, they don't think of that at all. They just say, this guy is actually alive, and too many people are believing, so let's kill him. In the resurrection of Lazarus, then, as we see through the lens of the Pharisees and so many more, there's so much brokenness. But we know this to be true. Death will not win. It cannot win. The resurrection is the living witness that the sting of death and grieving and mourning and sorrow and pain and suffering is gone forever and ever. Sin has not won. It will be no more. And the reason this is possible is because God gave everything. He gave everything. He didn't withhold his own son. You know, God loved Jesus. How often we see in the Gospels where a voice from heaven says, "This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased." We could not love our children any more than God loves his own son. In fact, infinitely more does God love his son, more than we love our own children, more than we love our own husband or wife. But yet God did not withhold him. And why not? So that you and I might have life in him forever. If this God who did not withhold and surrendered everything for us, gave it all, why is that we say, no, but not this, Lord, not this? The Lord is calling you today. What is your treasure? There is something that is keeping you from really turning to Christ, really believing, really growing, really delighting, enjoying, wanting to live for him. Something in your life matters more than Jesus. And he's saying, I want you to break your jar today. I want you to break your perfume. Hand it over. Trust me. If I have given my own life, will you not trust me with everything? Some of us love our children more than Christ. Some of us love not just marriage, but the idea of marriage, the ideal marriage, more than Jesus. Okay, I know I'm going to ruffle some hairs here, but some of us love our dogs more than Jesus. I'm ruffling hairs, not feathers, hairs, dog hairs. Some of us love our dogs more than Jesus. Can you surrender your dog? Some actually, I feel like, could surrender their child more than dog, or their husband and wife. Definitely the husband. Take the husband. Some of us need to surrender our careers. Really, it's everything to us. The reputation of our career. Some of us have to surrender our bank accounts. Some of us actually our fears, our worries, our control. I'm a control freak. It's hard. So I don't think it's a one-time surrender. I think it's a surrender, and then it's, okay, you got to do it again and again and again. Some of us have to be like Mary and say, I don't care what people think about me anymore. I don't care. I don't care whether I'm the most beautiful and attractive person or whether people think I'm, go with the opposite extreme, whatever that is. I don't care. I don't care. Some of us have to surrender our hopes and dreams, our failures. Your failure is literally controlling your life. Some of you have to surrender actually pleasing your parents, like living for their final, I'm proud of you. That's controlling you. The list is endless. I could just keep on going. But there is something that the Lord is saying to you. Will you trust me today? I promise you, I will not let you go. And to make sure you know that to be true, I gave my life for you. I've surrendered everything. Will you? Today, as we take communion, if you are a believer of Christ, I really invite you to hold that bread and wine. Remind yourself, this is what the Lord has surrendered to me. We're going to play a song that actually literally is called Jesus My Everything, and it just speaks of this truth. And I want you to allow it to minister to you and really take some time to think, what is it? What is that one thing? And if you don't know what that is, ask him. He will show you. And after, that's during communion, Joe will come up and first prepare the bread and the wine, and we'll do that. So, Joe.